Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be. And however you may be listening to the show, thanks so much for making this part of your day. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports Radio, and the iHeartRadio app. Quick plug, I have a podcast called All Ball on the Herd Podcast Network. There's a two-parter that we just dropped part two today with Rajah Bell, former nemesis of Kobe Bryant. If I'm not going to tout my own stuff, nobody will, but this is really, really, really good. Really good. Also, the Doug Gottlieb Show, my show I have, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Our show, it's a different podcast. Tony Allen joined me yesterday, and he reacted to the death of Kobe Bryant, and it was, I thought, spectacular stuff in that he felt like there's a conversation that he never had with Kobe that he wanted to have. Again, you can download that wherever you download podcasts. Welcome in. We have a spectacular show for you today. Chris Broussard will join us. So too will Rick Bucher. We'll talk a little NFL football, and probably some Lakers with native Los Angelian TJ Houshmandzadeh will join us. We got a lot to get to, including with Hoosh. Should Joe Burrow show up and play for the Bengals, or should he force his way out of Cincinnati before he's ever in Cincinnati? In other words, pull the Elway, pull the Eli Manning. Get to that during the show. But there's an old saying. Maybe it's a cliche. And look, we're told in this business, don't be cliche, right? Don't be cliche. But when the going gets tough, the tough do, in fact, get going, don't they? Defense does, in fact, win championships. Now, we could sit here and go, well, Doug, the Niners' defense is the best defense in the league. They didn't win a championship. Yeah, but the Chiefs don't come back and win that game if Chris Jones doesn't bat down a couple balls, if they don't get four consecutive stops when down 10 in the Super Bowl. Defense does win championships, right? We rave about the Golden State Warriors and their shooting, but during their championship runs, analytics would tell you they were, with the exception of one year, the best defensive teams in basketball. So cliches can be true. Matter of fact, they are generally true. They're just overused expressions. Here's one. Necessity is the root of all invention. I screwed it up again. Didn't I screw it up again? Take two. Necessity is the mother of all invention. Same thing, really, right? Finally nailed it, Gottlieb. That's what happened last night with the Houston Rockets. Now, long term, we will discuss. But short term, they did the thing which I love. You know, we talk about whether you're apps or desserts. I'm like, why do the appetizer? Just bring me two entrees. I'd rather have an additional entree than have a dessert. And matter of fact, that's one of the reasons I like apps over desserts is it's usually a mini entree. Why not just play your five best players at once? Well, what happens if your tallest player is 6'6", like Daniel House? Okay. So the Houston Rockets trade away Clint Capella. And many predict gloom and doom. And it is something that you kind of scratch your head at because, well, everybody has a rim protector in the NBA, right? Everyone who runs pick and roll, and it's called spread game, has a roller, has a rim protector, has somebody who defends the rim and rolls to the rim and finishes, and that's what Clint Capella, though overpaid, was doing. I am a broadcaster, a former college basketball player, former professional player, and I've also been a coach, coached teams overseas. I've coached in the TBT, the basketball tournament. I also coach youth teams. And when you get to a higher level of competition, collegiate or pros, what happened last night is what I have implored to college basketball coaches throughout the country, which is, hey, small ball works. It works. Now, the reason it works is not always just because you make a bunch of shots, Oftentimes, it's because of the other team's reaction to your lineup. And this actually starts at a very, very young age. Right? At a very young age. When you first start playing basketball, the biggest kid on the floor in rec basketball usually parks himself in the lane or just off the lane, puts his hand up, and every coach, every parent says, throw him the ball. And he's closer to the hoop, so he tries to throw it off the backboard and throw it in. And if he doesn't make it, he gets the rebound because he's bigger than everybody else, and he then keeps throwing it in there until it goes in. But a funny thing happened on the way to a win for the Lakers. See, look, I'm not a believer that all analytics tell every bit of the story. But analytics tell a portion of this story, which is really, really important. Doug Gottlieb in for calling this The Herd on Fox Sports Radio and Fox Sports 1. The Lakers played right into the Rockets' hands. See, what happens when you have a diminutive lineup and you have LeBron James or you have Anthony Davis, is you say, get down there, post up, we'll throw you the ball. Because that's what we've been taught for the last 30, 40, 50 years, right? It's a mismatch. When I played professional basketball, if I was caught on a big guy, you would immediately hear the bigger player say, mouse in the house, or just mouse. I got a little guy, give me the ball. And they'd give you the ball, and you felt like that was a sure two. Analytics tell us a completely different story. They tell us that shot in the post is actually an inefficient shot. If you like numbers, 0.777 is a post-up shot in the NBA. Guys practice it less, and even when they become, you know, lights-out scorers like Anthony Davis, all basketball players will tell you, you're allowed as a smaller player generally to be more physical, which makes a higher percentage shot a little bit lower percentage. But here's what analytics doesn't tell you. It doesn't just hurt you in the first shot. It hurts you because you stop running your offense. You know that thing that you've been working on since the beginning of training camp? All those sets, all those ball screens. Right? The ability, LeBron James' best attribute is not as a post player. It's playing what's called downhill, going towards the basket. Well, when you're throwing into a mismatch in the post, that goes away. It just does. Everybody stands and stops, and it becomes 1990s NBA basketball. Throw it to Pat Ewing, and he goes to work, and if you double team, he kicks out for a three. The other part it hurts you on is your ability to rebound the basketball. You would think that because you're bigger than the other team, well, you can just crash the glass and rebound. And maybe to a certain extent you can. But one, the defense knows that, so they'll box out more. Two, when you have a guy at the post, I want you to picture this, like Anthony Davis. He catches the ball. He has a defender on him. He shoots the basketball, or somebody else shoots the basketball. There's a man between him and the basket. Makes it easier to box out. As opposed to when you're running screen and roll and somebody shoots, that same big guy has a running start who's nearly impossible to box out. You're making yourself easier to defend. You're shooting less efficient shots. You're getting out of your offense, and you're easier to box out. And, oh, yeah, by the way, because you have a size advantage on the boards, generally guys crash the boards more. What happens when you do that? The back end's open, and now the other team can transition better. Look, the Houston Rockets played with a center last night. His name is Russell Westbrook. Russell Westbrook, you thought he was a point guard. No, no, no. All you have to have is one what's called a clogger. One guy doesn't shoot that well. That's okay. One two-point shooter. The rest are three-point shooters. Nobody's in the lane. It makes you really hard to defend. And instead of having Clint Capella and Russell Westbrook, two cloggers, if you will, two guys who clog up the lane, who can help on James Harden, who can help on different drives, who can help rebounding, now there's no help. If you help, he kicks off, they shoot a three. Yes, the game plan is to expose your mismatch and to beat you off the dribble and to find your big guy and beat him like they beat Kyle Kuzma last night, your weak defender, sure, on offense, but it actually takes you out of your offense at your own end. Don't believe me? Take a listen to Frank Vogel. He's the head coach of the Lakers as to what went wrong at Staples last night.
With the advantage you had with size, it seemed like your team was trying to force the ball a little bit too much to the post, maybe turning the ball over a little bit. Would that be accurate?
Probably the understatement of the year. Yeah, we were terrible with, just like you said, force feed it inside, getting our spacing right against, their post frontals and, just not reading the weak side. You know, I mean, that's where most of our turnovers came, and it disrupted our flow.
Disrupt your flow. All that stuff, all the plays you practice, they all go out the window because you're like, we got a mismatch. That was from Spectrum Sportsnet. After the game, Frank Vogel going, that's the understatement of the year. It actually screwed us up on offense that we had a size advantage every time down the court, and we tried to take advantage of it. Played in their hands. Meanwhile, when you play small, your shooting percentage is better, your turnovers are lower, your three-point percentage is better, and you know, most importantly, you know what your weakness is, so it's easier to at least know how they're going to attack you. Necessity is the mother of all invention, and the Houston Rockets were stuck. They were stuck, right? They couldn't play any other way, and they tried with Clint Capella, you know, they've tried with stretch bigs. They tried all this different. Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, it wasn't working. You know what? The hell with it. Let's just, instead of having a small ball lineup at the end of the game, like the Warriors who had their death lineup, what if we did it the entire game? Dr. Oz had a New Year's resolution for America. You guys know who Dr. Oz is? He's like America's doctor. And he said to stop eating breakfast. Stop eating breakfast. And you're sitting there and you're got your Frosted Flakes and you're looking up and you're like, Gottlieb, one, you're not Cowherd, and two, I like Frosted Flakes. Why do I have to stop eating them? Well, I was taught as a kid that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. In addition to breakfast foods generally being filled with carbs and sugar, right, which is even more carbs, right? Right? Because, I mean, think about breakfast food, right? Between cereal, which is carbs, or pancakes, or waffles, or whatever. Sure, you can do what Shannon Sharp does if you have discipline. He eats egg whites and oatmeal every day for 20 years. Ask him. It's amazing, right? But most people don't. The whole breakfast is the most important meal of the day. That was from a breakfast company. That was from a breakfast company. You were sold a bale of goods. Just like the whole idea of, hey, we got to throw it to the big guy. Mismatch. Yeah, well, it's actually better for you to not eat breakfast and to get right to the substantial meals of the day if you want to do the fasting thing or eat quality foods. You know, you can eat a salad for breakfast. You can eat chicken for breakfast. That's fine. Breakfast is not the breakfast foods are not the most important meal of the day. You actually don't need to satisfy your hunger. And when you're super hungry coming off of sleep, the first thing you do is put sugar in your system. It actually is worse than not eating. That's the same thing as what you've always been taught about basketball, which is when you have a mismatch, forget everything else, throw it inside. Mouse in the house. Don't believe me? The Lakers, who were trying to show off for Darren Collison, who was on like a recruiting visit last night, end up kind of embarrassing themselves by getting completely out of sorts because they're like, hey, their tallest guy is 6'6", and we got Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Oops. This show, other shows, we have a tendency to kill analytics. Last night was a win. Last night was a win.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Yesterday was the NBA's trade deadline. It came, it went, and there were thoughts that Andre Iguodala would be the missing piece for maybe a team like the Lakers or maybe a team like the Clippers. Obviously, the Lakers, Rob Pelinka's his former agent, and people thought he might end up there. Of course, the Memphis Grizzlies held on to his rights. He refused to play for the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies came out on Twitter and went at him. Dylan Brooks actually got a contract extension, I think because he's a better-than-they-thought player, but also maybe because he defended the honor of Memphis. Anyway, the Miami Heat end up, via a trade, landing Andre Iguodala. Oh, and here's the kicker. They gave him a contract extension. Now, you will hear people around the NBA say, wow, Andre Iguodala, NBA Finals MVP on the Miami Heat. This is the missing piece. What a great trade. Now they're on the same tier as the Bucks. Elevates them above the Raptors and the Boston Celtics. Puts them right there, head, you know, face to face. The first thing is we cannot take what we see in the regular season to be true, right? Go and look at the team that had the best record in the Eastern Conference in the regular season over the past 5 to 10 years, 5 to 10 years, And you will see that very, very rarely does that team actually get to the NBA Finals, nor are they the favorite to get to the NBA Finals. And Miami specifically this year, because they have a younger, energetic team, because Jimmy Butler's trying to prove he's worth this max contract, Miami's been way better than expected. Keep in mind that Miami has this one thing. They have they're basically like Hawaii in basketball, right? Like Hawaii, a lot of times they'll get a team on the way out to the Maui Invitational, and they'll stop on Honolulu. They'll play a game, and they'll lose. Right? Because that team is thinking about the beach. That team just got off the plane. That team's got dead legs. You know, they've been drinking papaya juice for the first time in their lives. Miami, any of us, anyone in broadcasting knows this. The South Beach flu is real. Right? Like, we're freaking out, rightfully so, I think, about this coronavirus. But I can tell you that most media members are still recovering and our immune systems are down from the South Beach flu. And the South Beach flu is just basically like you feel like you're in a foreign country. I think there's really two cities in the United States where you feel like you're in a foreign country. One is Seattle, where you do feel like you're in kind of Canada. And then one is Miami, where you feel like you're in Central to South America, right? You feel like you could be in Argentina or in Brazil. You know, there's just a different sensibility. And heck, you know, it's very easy and normal to go out to dinner at 10 o'clock. Clubs are open super late. It's just different. And you take Philadelphia, they go down there the other day, and they get stomped. Well, they had a day off between Orlando and Miami, South Beach flu. You get to the playoffs and teams aren't going out. Teams are taking you seriously. And suddenly, Miami comes back to reality. But here's the bigger thing. It wasn't just that they traded for Iguodala. That's a big thing. Yes, the Lakers wanted Iguodala, but they wanted him on the buyout market. They wanted him for like $1 million or $2 million. They wanted him for nothing. Now he's going to make $30 million over the next 2 years? I know you look at Andre Iguodala and you think, okay, well, he was an all-star, and then he was a finals MVP. During his time with the Warriors, not only did he average fewer points every year, 5 points a game last year, never averaged double digits. Right? He hasn't played over 30 minutes a game in the last 5 years. If you remember back 2 years ago when they survived the Houston Rockets, one of the reasons they struggled with the Houston Rockets was he was hurt. And then he got hurt again in the NBA Finals. He was leaking oil. He was that car you knew was once upon a time a beautiful car, a great, an all-star caliber car that you could only drive on weekends. And if you pay a guy $15 million a year for 2 years, that's not a weekend car. That's an everyday car. Andre Iguodala, in his own words last May, when asked about being hurt, being injured, he said, just a lot of minutes and overuse. I'm old. Iguodala said after practice, it just flared up real quick. But we have a good training staff. When you've been playing for five long seasons, it's bound to come up. It's rare that you see it. It's hard for it to be realized. My career is almost over anyway, so I really don't care. My career, this is last May, he said, my career is almost, be like, well, he took the first half of the season off, so he's fine. Like, no, that's not the way it works. You have a pair of radials, right? Some tires. And they generally last, you know, 30,000 miles. And you get to like 29,000 miles and they're balding. And you don't drive the car for 6 months. The radials don't repair themselves. Like, that's not the way it actually works. And your body is the same. It actually becomes harder, not easier. Right? This reminds me of like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Do you guys remember the problem with Ferris Bueller's Day Off at the end of the movie? You guys remember what happened? Cameron's dad had this incredible Porsche, right? And he knew how many miles were on it. And Ferris is like, don't worry, we're just going to drive to the city and back. Spoiler alert, by the way, if you haven't seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You know, they drive it to some parking garage, and the guy's like, no problem. Then he drives the car all over Chicago. You get it back. It's got so many miles. No problem. We'll just put it in reverse. Yet it doesn't work that way. That's how your body's odometer is as well. The idea that Andre Iguodala is like Ponce de Leon, going to find the fountain of youth somewhere in Miami, is laughable. Congratulations to Andre Iguodala, right? Like, I don't hate the player. I hate the game. Unless he's going to that same clinic all those baseball players went to, which I don't think Andre Iguodala is. Oh, he just got over. Not only do you want me, but you'll give me another year guaranteed money? Sure, I'll show up. Fine. You know, I only play about 20 minutes a game. And oh yeah, by the way, I play center or power forward now. That's what he did with the Golden State Warriors. Good luck with that. The Heat got so boondoggled, got so desperate, thinking they were a championship team, they end up screwing the whole thing up and giving a guy an extra year who, based on his own admission, was done last year.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Look, Inside the NBA is a great show. It's a great show for a myriad of reasons, mostly because Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley is a former Philadelphia 76ers. Sixers get blown out. It wasn't blown out. They did make it competitive, at least, with the Milwaukee Bucks. Get beaten by the Milwaukee Bucks. And here's Chuck on the Sixers.
I think they are the softest, mentally weakest team. It had a bunch of talent. They are the Cleveland Browns of the NBA.
Damn.
They got a lot of talent.
The Browns?
And they talk the talk, and that's it.
The difference between Giannis and Embiid is force. Giannis is playing with force, and Embiid is playing S-O-F capital T.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is kind of classic Shaq. Look, Embiid did not play well. They're different players. I just think that the deal is this. Ben Simmons, who I was on this show and I said I believed he was the most talented one and done that we'd ever had in college basketball. Now, what happens when you say talented is people think that talent is all that matters. That means you'll be the best. Right? Obviously, Kevin Durant had an incredible year at Texas scoring wise, okay? But his body wasn't ready yet. He had a lot of his game to develop at the defensive end. Simmons, who kind of built his game to model, among other people, Lamar Odom, right? People think that he wanted to be LeBron. There was some LeBron. There was some Magic. But there was a lot of Lamar Odom. Simmons is a remarkable talent. People, like, he's a rookie of the year. The problem with Simmons is he a winning basketball player? Does he care more about winning than anything else? Obviously, his jump shooting has not improved. Like, he had 1-3, and people went, Twitter goes crazy, right? He has not, I'm not saying he doesn't work, but he has not put in the work to make himself the type of shooter you have to be in the NBA. And look, this is coming from somebody who, if you want to know why I didn't make it, wasn't because I was short. That doesn't help. Right? It was because I couldn't shoot. And it's even more important now. And if he was on the Bucks, I actually think he'd be better off because, well, I mean, look, Giannis is not a great shooter. Now, he'll shoot threes even though he doesn't shoot a great percentage and he's improved. But what they do is they put four shooters on the court with him so there's nobody in the lane. You can't do that with Embiid, who's trying to post up, and then Ben Simmons, who's got to drive to the basket. They're a bad fit. And they're also a bad fit in terms of personalities, right? Ben Simmons wants to be Hollywood. Joel Embiid wants to be everybody's best friend and a joker and silly. And it just doesn't work. Like, look, for years, Ben Simmons wasn't on the Australian national team. There was just this something about him that other dudes didn't dig. It wasn't that they don't like his talent. They like his talent. But there's something about that he didn't do. He wasn't a little things guy. Like, remember, if you think of the Australian national team, you think of guys like Matthew Dellavedova, who have a fraction of the God-given talent of a Ben Simmons. But they play incredibly hard, all right? They're incredibly tough. They make shots, and they feel better when others are succeeding. Like, that's not Simmons. You can tell me he's all about winning all you want, but you follow him on Instagram, it ain't about winning. It's glam shots every day in front of a car, in front of a plane, in front of a tiger. Like, you want to know why? That's why. I don't care about you. Like, what is the LeBron James saying? Keep the main thing the main thing? Right? Keep the main thing the main thing. Hey, dude, you want to make in this league? Get in the gym and stay in the gym. Get in the gym and stay in the gym. And I actually think part of his turning down jump shots that are wide open is smart. You know, like, don't get goaded into a shot you're not comfortable. But you got to – what is your game shot? What can you make? Because you're hurting the team by not taking those shots, believe it or not. Like, you actually have to coach him the opposite of everybody else. Everybody else, right, when they take bad shots, you take them out. Right? For him, when he turns down a good shot, you got to take him out. You're open. You have to shoot the ball. He is killing the 76ers by forget his lack of makes, his lack of takes. Take it. You got to take it. And if you don't, you got to come out. I think some of that criticism is on the nose from Chuck. I don't know. Shaq, everybody's soft compared to Shaq. This is the old player. Everybody's soft. League used to be tougher. He's not wrong. Some of that, a lot of that's the officiating. Right? But Joel Embiid continues to refine his talent. He had a bad night last night. And I do think that Embiid has some holes in his game, but it feels like he continues to shore them up. And like if you could combine the two players, this just feels like a bad fit. We were talking about marriage. This is one where they're walking down the aisle and somebody's like, 6 months. Right? 6 months. I give it 6 months. Here we are a couple years in and we're postponing the inevitable. That's what we're doing.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
He's a former Pro Bowler in the National Football League. He's TJ Houshmandzadeh. You'll see him on Speak for Yourself a little bit later. You always see him on Fox Sports 1. Hoosh, I want to ask you, I think you were on yesterday. Were you on yesterday with Bucky Brooks when he said...
No, I was not.
Okay, let me play for you what he said about Tom Brady being a system quarterback.
Gotcha.
He's a system quarterback who has played in a great system that has produced a lot of winning. Because that same system helped Matt Castle go 11-5 when Tom Brady wasn't available to the knee. Tom Brady, at this stage of his career, he needs the system more than ever. Like, if we're talking about Michael Jordan, the one thing you can never question about Michael Jordan, he was a transcendent player.
Yeah.
He was transcendent in college. He was transcendent from the time he stepped into the league. We can never say that Tom Brady was transcendent coming into the league.
Took Jordan a while to win a championship.
Bucky's wrong.
I know he's wrong.
He's wrong.
I was trying to be nice because I like Bucky. So
yeah, Bucky's cool. He's just wrong.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Like, Jordan didn't win until they ran the triangle. That's a system. Whereas Brady, when he first got to the league, he was more facilitator, right? Then he became the most – they had the most dynamic offense in the NFL. Then everything was dink and dunk, short, underneath, crossing stuff with, you know, Welker. And then they become a power running team, and they'd find Gronk on a mismatch, right? Like, those are
– But every quarterback is a system quarterback. Good coaching finds what fits you well, and that's what they – every quarterback is a system quarterback. Some are more the system, like right. I am the system, and that's what Brady is. He – Bucky's wrong. He's been saying this all year. And next year, we're really going to find out because Brady won't be there. So we'll find out.
But he won't be there?
No. 0% chance.
0% chance?
0%.
Where does he go?
There's a few teams. I'll give you more than a few.
Okay.
Where does he go? I don't know. There's too many to decipher and choose from.
You said 0% chance.
Zero.
I would go 1%. I would.
0%.
Door closed.
Door closed.
Okay.
I could look at the Chargers.
Okay.
Obviously, the Chargers in Tennessee that's been talked about. I believe he wants to go to warm weather. So then I have to throw in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, New Orleans Saints, the Dallas Cowboys, if they can't work anything out with Dak. But if I had to say which one, it would be one of the three between Tampa Bay, San Diego, Tennessee.
Okay, it's L.A. now, but I know what you mean with it. Okay, so can I counterpoint to you?
Yeah.
He ain't going to Tampa. He ain't going to Tennessee.
You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think. Giselle, maybe Nashville. She ain't going to Tampa, dude.
I'm telling you.
Okay, I get it. I mean,
Yeah. He wants A.B. to come with him.
Antonio Brown?
Yeah.
Look, Antonio Brown, nobody's stopping Antonio Brown from being in the NFL more than Antonio Brown.
Yeah, but he respects Brady. No, if you notice, when he got released,
but he doesn't respect anybody else.
But he respects Brady.
Like, that
enough,
is not that is listen
enough to where, and I'll even throw the Raiders in there with Brady as well. But he respects Brady enough to where he won't disappoint him. He doesn't want to disappoint.
Listen to me.
Trust me.
I trust your intel and your insight. And you know I love you as much as any man loves another man that I have no relationship with, right? But, bro, this is not a Tom Brady decision, Antonio Brown. This is a Roger Goodell decision.
Oh, no, granted, all that works itself out, and he doesn't do
it. It ain't working itself out.
He doesn't do anything from – you see he's on his make nice parade right now.
For a day.
I'm apologizing.
We're like
it's been about a week. It's been about a week.
It's been about a week without Antonio Brown. Okay, I don't see him going – like the whole Chargers thing. Do you think Shane Steichen, who's their offensive coordinator, has been – he's going to – Brady's going to be like, yeah, I'm going to work with Shane Steichen, who I don't know from Adam, and with that offensive line. Do I think they have great skill position players? They do. They have maybe the best skill position players, including the Chiefs, of any team in the NFL. But I don't see Brady going there, and L.A. and Vegas make the most sense. Like, he's a megastar. He's about winning. He's not going to Tennessee. He's not going
to
Tampa.
You got to look at the teams that they have to play in their division. If you go to the Chargers
– yeah.
You're playing the Chiefs,
yep.
And you're playing the Broncos, who has a really good defense. Oh, and you're going to play the Raiders, who is up and coming. So you got to look at the division that he's going to be in the division he just left, where the path of least resistance in the AFC East, he's looking at that.
Okay, so what do you think about the Dak Prescott contract?
It's going to be complicated. Obviously, it's been complicated. I'm not making him the highest paid quarterback in the league. I'm not paying him more than Russell Wilson. I'm not paying him more than Aaron Rodgers. The Jared Goff, Carson Wentz range, I could see that. He's played better than them, but I can argue Jared Goff took his team to the Super Bowl and Dak Prescott had a better roster. And so, but I can see giving him 33, 34 max a year. I'm not going above that.
I wouldn't either. Look, I think he's fine. I think he's good enough to win with, and you can get stability with him. And you can't give him. The problem is that Jerry's going to give in at some level, because Jerry always gives in, doesn't he?
Man, it's been a while. He hasn't given in yet. Hope maybe Steven is talking some sense into him and saying, listen, this is what it has to be.
I think he's talking sense into Steven. Steven is like, he's okay. He doesn't win his big games on his own.
He's convincing Steven, let's give him a little more.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's the way that dynamic works.
I believe as long as they stay under 35, 34, 35, that's the smart thing to do. But for some reason in the NFL, it's, the last quarterback that got paid got $35 million. I have to leapfrog him. Not if you're not better than him.
Kyle Shanahan was talking about Jimmy Garoppolo yesterday. I think we have that sound. This is Kyle Shanahan when asked, you know, he was, people have said, like, is Jimmy Garoppolo the problem? Is that a fix? He's 28 years old, but that was only his first season in the NFL. Here's Kyle Shanahan talking about his quarterback.
I think Jimmy's one of the main reasons we got to the Super Bowl. I think he overcame a lot. This is his first year in his career going through an entire NFL season. He still doesn't have as many starts and stuff as Baker Mayfield. I think he had a hell of a first year. Truly playing the position, for him to be like that and to not let the pressure get to him and to improve as the year went, I think says a ton about Jimmy. And I can't tell you how much I loved coaching the guy as a player and as a person this year.
You buy that?
Some of it. I go back to the second quarter. Like, you don't call a timeout. This is the Super Bowl. And then you say, well, if they stop us and give their quarterback the ball, oh, yeah, you trust their quarterback is going to go down the field against you guys against a better defense, but you don't trust your quarterback will go down the field against their defense.
There's an expression I used. I used it with Colin the other day. I use it all the time. It's you can't fool players. And whether it's you as a player, but more than anything, all those Niners are sitting there on the sideline. And they're like, what? We're going to.
It was the week before. You're killing the Packers.
Yes.
You're killing them.
Let them throw.
Just giving 15 pass attempts, because he's walking from this game saying, wow, I haven't thrown the ball at all. Like, I'm getting kind of stiff. Like, you let him throw the ball 8 times in the game that you had won. That right there showed Jimmy G and the rest of the team, we don't really trust him like we should.
And then you back it up with end of the first half.
That just reinforces everything that they thought going into the game.
That said, man, they got a 10-point lead. Second down, clearly should have checked out of a run. He doesn't. Third down, I get Chris Jones deflected a couple, but he didn't even see, you know, arguably the best or second best George Kittle tight end wide open over the middle. He was so
shook.
I'll give him
a pass on that because a lot of people don't know. Well, a lot of people do know. The quarterback reads are defined. So if it's a two high or one high look, Kittle probably, because of the defense that the Chiefs played, wasn't even part of the read. He just so happened to pop open. It could have been the coverage dictated, I'm working this side of the field, I'm not even looking at Kittle. That could have been the case. So I'll give him a pass on that one.
All right, what about Emmanuel Sanders? He's open. He just missed him.
He missed the throw.
But he didn't. It wasn't like he missed by this much.
He missed it, yeah.
That was a just a bit outside. He missed him bad. Yeah. And he missed him long, whereas you missed him short, maybe you get pass interference.
If you miss him short this day and age, it's going to be pass. Even the pass to Kittle. I'm a receiver. I didn't think that was P.I. Just before halftime. I didn't think that was P.I.
No, I did not as well. So they got some bad luck, but clearly Garoppolo let that one get away. And then I thought then when they're down four, they only ran the football once on that drive, and it was the first down. They get 17 yards, then they stop running the football. It's like, hey, now they're expecting the pass. You should run the football again.
The game plan was a little odd considering you let him throw it 8 times a week prior. We ran the ball down their throat. You were running the ball very effectively in the Super Bowl, and in a one-possession game, you kind of get away from it. And so a lot of things didn't make sense. The good thing about it is they're young, and hopefully they will learn from this. But Kyle Shanahan, he's going to have to right the ship because it's been twice. You've done it 2 times.
You play with Carson. Carson Palmer came out and said if he was Burrow, he wouldn't want to play. He wouldn't play for the Bengals. There have been others that have said that. His dad said, I don't know where people are getting that from. He's just excited to be one of the top picks, but didn't say he absolutely wants to be a Bengal. You've lived that life. Granted, not recently with the Bengals, but you guys are pretty good. What would you tell Joe Burrow to make them trade that pick?
I'm not telling Joe Burrow anything. It's you and your dad. Your dad's a coach. You grew up in Ohio. You have representation. Y'all come to a conclusion that you think fits you, and you live with it. If I'm the Bengals, personally, I'm going to trade the pick because I can get more picks, and it will make my team better. If I can get Herbert or Tua, I'm okay with that
as well. I understand, but you're speaking sensibly. You know, because you played and lived as a Bengal.
The Bengals aren't going to trade the pick.
Correct. The Bengals are going to take him, and if you don't want to play, right, so now it becomes like Joe Burrow. Do you sit?
No, you don't sit. Joe Burrow didn't play for 2 years at Ohio State. 3 years. He transfers. He graduates. And he finally gets a chance to play. He's confident enough to say, I believe I can turn this thing around. Whether that's true or not, he has that type of confidence. I know the Bengals aren't going to trade the pick. And he'll know ahead of time. If he says we don't want to play there, behind the scenes, they'll say, oh, we're drafting you anyway.
Do you have intel? You got intel on Brady. Do you got intel on Darren Collison if he's signing at the Lakers?
I hope he does, man. We need some help, man.
How can he sit there next to Jeannie Buss and not do, like, the commitment thing
it's
with the hat or something?
It's a done deal, man.
It's got to be a wrap.